This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Central America is a part of the world in which civil war and military dictatorships have been a fact of life. But there is one Central American country that not only has democratic elections, it has no army, Costa Rica. My guest, Oscar Arias, was the president of Costa Rica from 1986 to 1990. His goal during that period was to bring peace and democracy to the region. He negotiated a peace plan that was accepted by all five Central American nations. The plan opened the way for the 1990 election in Nicaragua. Now, for the first time in 168 years, all of the countries in Central America are ruled by civilian leaders chosen in competitive elections. Arias received the 1987 Nobel Peace Prize. This July 4th, he was given the Philadelphia Liberty Medal for his contributions to the extension of freedoms in other regions of the world. I spoke with him shortly before he was given the Liberty Medal. I asked Arias about the results of the peace talks that have been most gratifying.
Well, the fact that we were able to change Central American history. You know, in 1986, when I came into power, Central American presidents had never met, mainly because of the Cold War. The conflict in Central America was due in part to the Cold War between the West and the East, but also there was an ingredient of the North-South conflict, the rich against the poor, the rich exploiting the very poor in the region. So with the peace plan, we were able to meet for the first time, to get to know each other, and we were able to understand that it was at the negotiating table and not through violence, not through military means, that we should resolve our differences. So when you look at Central America today, it's a very different Central America, in the sense that when the presidents meet our successors, no longer they talk about ceasefires, amnesties, freeing political prisoners, opening up newspapers which had been closed by dictatorial governments. But they talk about the future of Central America, the economic and social future of the region. So it's a different agenda.
What have your disappointments been since the peace talks were signed?
Well, the fact that there hasn't been the political will to advance much faster. Still, there are negotiations in Guatemala and El Salvador. And in both countries, the parties involved in the conflicts haven't been able to reach a ceasefire. I think that a lot of time has been wasted because still the main obstacle to peace in the region, but this is always true for conflicts all over the world, and this is particularly true in the Middle East today. I mean, the main obstacle is still intransigence, dogmatism, inflexibility, not learning that there is no other way but diplomatic solutions to conflicts, to wars, to violence.
Violeta Chamorro seems to have lost the support of the coalition that helped her get elected, and she seems to have lost it because of her ties with the Sandinistas. What do you see in Nicaragua when you look ahead to the near future?
Well, that was not an easy transition. You know, you don't have easy transitions from one government to another when you have had either a Marxist government or a dictatorial government. This was true for Spain, for instance. This is also true for Chile in South America. A lot of people talk about Nicaragua, but no one mentions Chile. But here you have in Chile a new president, freely elected by the Chilean people, and Pinochet is still the head of the army, the head of the armed forces. So it's not easy for President Aylwin to govern with Pinochet still being the commandante of the Chilean army. This is also true in Nicaragua with Humberto Ortega remaining as the head of the Sandinista army. So it is not an easy transition. I think that it is not easy for her to govern with a coalition of 14 parties. She still has many problems ahead of her. She inherited a devastated economy. Nicaragua is in ruins. And the sad thing about Nicaragua, and this is true for the whole of Central America, is that that part of the world is no longer important to anyone. So that's perhaps the main problem now, that Nicaragua has been forgotten by the rich countries of the world, that no one cares anymore about Nicaragua because there is peace, there is no longer war, and because, well, war is much more important for the international press than peace. And so Nicaragua, and Doña Violeta in particular, hasn't been able to get or to find the solidarity from the rich countries that she needs in order to reactivate that economy.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Oscar Arias, former president of Costa Rica, the winner of the 1987 Nobel Peace Prize. Can you give me a sense of why you thought that you could actually bring together the heads of all the Central American countries and get them together to talk about things like ceasefires and elections? What made you think you could do that?
Well, I had no choice. You know, I came to power in May of 1986, and I had pledged to the Costa Rican people that I wanted to rebuild the economy, to create 30,000 jobs a year, to build 25,000 homes a year, more homes per capita wise than any other country in the whole continent, and that in order to do that, it was for me very important to keep Costa Rica out of the conflicts of the region. So I wanted to play not only a passive role trying to promote peace in Central America, but a more active role. So I decided that Costa Rica had the moral authority because it is the oldest democracy in the region and because it is a country without an army. It is a country where our main values are tolerance and dialogue and trying to solve conflicts always at the negotiating table. So I introduced our own peace plan. It was a very simple peace plan. And the equation was, well, we need peace in order to bring democracy. There will be no democracy in the region unless we put an end to the war, unless we bring a durable peace. And without peace and democracy, there will be no economic development. There were many differences among the different presidents. Nicaragua was a Marxist country, and they were determined to stay in power forever. This is what Daniel Ortega had told me the first time we met. But there is always a first time. I needed Daniel Ortega to sign a peace plan committing himself to hold free elections, and that's what he did. And once he signed that plan, he had to comply with it. There was a lot of international pressure, and when we were able to plan those elections, there were many observers from all over the world. Former President Carter helped a lot to the Central American countries. Those were the most observed elections in the history of Latin America, and those were also the freest and fairest elections in the history of Nicaragua.
Now, I think one of the things you wanted to accomplish for your country in the peace talks was to end military support of the Contras. Now, Contras would slip in and out of your borders. What kind of threat did they pose to your country?
Well, many. You know, I had to take a very difficult decision to ask the Contras either to resign to a military solution for Nicaragua or to leave Costa Rica. Most of them left Costa Rica, abandoned Costa Rica, and came to Miami. I wanted to be very strict on that because my main commitment with the Costa Rican people was that I was not going to tolerate that 1 inch of Costa Rican territory be used by the Contras. And I wanted to be neutral in the sense that I needed the moral authority to be a mediator and to try to bring a peaceful solution to the region. At the first moment, the Sandinistas were very skeptical about our peace plan, in the sense that they always thought it was a plan against the Nicaraguans, against the Sandinistas, but not in favor of the five Central American countries. I don't know if you still remember, but only a few days before our meeting in Guatemala, another peace plan was proposed, and that was the Wright-Reagan plan. This was a plan sponsored by Jim Wright, the Speaker of the House at that time, and President Reagan. So I was very upset, and I told my colleagues in the region that I would only attend a meeting if it was only to discuss our peace plan, the Costa Rican peace plan. They accepted that, and against all odds, we were able to sign the peace plan.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Oscar Arias, the former president of Costa Rica, the winner of the 1987 Nobel Peace Prize for the peace talks that he organized among the leaders of the five Central American countries. We're going to take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Oscar Arias is my guest. When you became president in 1986, what were your initial contacts like with the Reagan administration? Did the administration send people to see you and to tell you what the United States expected of you?
Well, yes. They expected of me to support U.S. policy in the region. And they weren't very happy when I told them that I was going to oppose that policy because I had pledged to the Costa Rican electorate, and this is why I won that election, that I wanted peace for my country. And allowing our territory to be used by the Contras would imply no peace for Costa Rica.
What kinds of pressures did the Reagan administration put on you to comply with U.S. policy in the region? And did the Reagan administration give you a sense of what the consequences would be if you didn't comply?
Well, not necessarily. You know, they were very polite and they use very subtle pressures in the sense that we relied a lot on economic aid. And they never dared to tell me, well, if you don't support us, if you don't help us, we're going to cut aid to Costa Rica. But there were many subtle ways how to delay the disbursement of that aid, for instance.
When you were elected, well, after you were elected, you found a CIA-backed airstrip in your country, and you were going to go public about it. What was your strategy about how to deal with this CIA airstrip. And why didn't you want it there? You wanted to shut it down.
Well, again, I had committed myself with the Costa Rican people and with the whole world not to allow our territory to be used by the countries. So I was not going to hide anything. So I told the CIA, I never met Mr. Casey as a matter of fact, because he wanted to meet me in private, and I didn't accept a private meeting with him.
Why not?
Because I'm not used to that. Because if I was going to meet Mr. Casey, I wanted to meet him in front of the press. I want no secrets with the CIA. So I told the CIA anyway, and the State Department, that that airstrip had to be shut, had to be closed right away, because I was not going to allow one single inch of Costa Rican territory to be used by the Contras, and that instead I was going to promote a peace initiative, and that's what I did.
What was the initial reaction of the Reagan administration to that?
Well, again, they were not too happy. They were absolutely convinced that the only way to get rid of the Sandinistas was through the Contras. For me, the Contras were the problem, not the solution. For Mr. Reagan, the Contras were always the solution, not the problem.
Now, you were the president of a country in which there's been no army since 1949, a very unusual state for any country to be in. Why was the army disbanded then?
Because we had no need for an army. And I would say that in many countries in Latin America, there is no need for an army. There was a need for an army many centuries ago in order to fight for independence from the Spaniards. There was a need for an army when there was no United Nations, when we couldn't rely on international law to solve most differences among countries. There was a need for an army when there were many border disputes in Latin America. But today we have to find excuses in order to strengthen our armies and keep our armies. Look at the Panamanians. The main excuse some people use in Panama for the Panamanian army is that they need to defend the canal. But to be honest, the Panamanian people and the Panamanian government doesn't need an army to defend that canal, because that canal can be destroyed so easily with or without a Panamanian army. So I am trying to abolish the Panamanian army. And this is, in a way, Costa Rican imperialism, because what I'm trying to do with Panama is to follow Costa Rica's example.
Did you ever feel vulnerable heading a country without an army in an area where you're surrounded by dictatorships and guerrilla wars and so on? Now, I'm sure that's one of the reasons why you wanted the peace talks to succeed. But still, there's been a long history of Costa Rica being in this really unstable region and yet not having an army. So do you feel vulnerable?
Not at all. Who would dare to attack Costa Rica, to invade Costa Rica, knowing that we have no army? You know, we have so many friends, mainly because we have no army, that none of our neighbors would ever dare to invade Costa Rica, knowing that we have so many friends who could come to support Costa Rica if we are invaded. And this is something the Sandinistas always knew. So they never dared to touch Costa Rica. But this is also true, you know, for many other countries. And under the Arias Foundation for Peace and Human Progress, I am trying now to demilitarize the region. If we are able to succeed in abolishing the army in Panama, and I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to succeed, I think it would be very unique for the world, because for the first time in history, two neighboring countries will prove to the world that We both had the courage and the vision to abolish our armies and to teach the rest of the world that armies are not needed.
You don't have an army, but you do have guards, right, who protect the country?
Well, we have a police, a civil police, to deal with criminality, yes.
But there's no border guards? Are there border security forces?
No. You know, the wisdom of not having an army is that we don't spend any money on arms, on tanks, on helicopters, on warplanes, and that's what is expensive, you know. Look at Iraq. I mean, Iraq is spending 700 times more in defense than in health and education. And in most Latin American countries are spending twice or three times more in defense than in health and education. And in the Middle East is not two or three times, but five, six, seven times more in defense than health and education. So you cannot satisfy the basic needs of any society unless you change that. And this is something that must be learned not only by the developing countries, but also by the rich countries, which are the ones who are manufacturing the arms. And those arms will be sold mainly in the next decade to developing countries, to governments in the developing world. And this is something we must stop right now, because otherwise we are condemning those developing countries to remain poor eternally.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oscar Arias is the former president of Costa Rica. Last week, he was in Philadelphia to accept the Philadelphia Liberty Medal for his work on behalf of freedom. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.